All right, hello and welcome to the At YouTube Podcast, episode number 66. This is the podcast. I've forgotten how to do all this, so forgive me if I make a mistake, but we talk about all things. Is it all things new kids on the block? Is that the right podcast? I'm on
yep.
the show, right?
Yep. So we've got far,
a tour underway right now, and so we're hoping to catch Donnie and Darko and
Joey,
and I forget the rest of them, the other new kids, I'm sure. Anyways, no, this is the At YouTube Podcast, talking all things new to YouTube, including for the first time in a long time, new album news and tour dates, community discussions, etc., from the staff of At YouTube. On the episode. This episode, I've got to my right.
Wait, you got to introduce yourself first. You haven't been on in a while.
First, nobody will remember who I am. That's how quickly people forget about you on the internet. I'm Chris, iChris on Twitter, and back hosting the show. Thank you to Matt for, in my absence while I was off collecting maple syrup and whatever else you alerted the listeners to where I was.
There was a poutine emergency.
Right. Oh, yes, poutine. Yeah. And, but yeah, so Sherry, to my right. My left,
Hello.
My right. Welcome back. Sure, you're rocking a helmet just in case.
Yeah, you know, my favorite line today is, I can see what you can't see. Thank you, Edge.
And to my bottom, below me, is Colin. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you. I'm hoping my internet does not black out this time. Yeah.
And finally, Mr. Matt McGee. Welcome back to the
Chris,
program.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Now, it's been a few podcasts, and I just want to make sure, did you remember to start recording?
I think so.
Check the levels.
I think so. We'll find out pretty quickly. Well, no, we won't actually. Okay. We'll find out in the end if anything, any of this is recorded.
This could be the most, what's the word I'm looking for? Fleeting podcast we've ever done.
Yeah.
Impermanent.
Fabiano's watching live, so at least he'll have seen it, if nothing else.
We have at least one in our audience.
I think he actually transcribes every episode as we do it, so right now he's writing it out for us, so there'll be a written version that you can read later. No, I'm just kidding. But Colin, you were actually, Joshua Tree Tour is underway still. It's not completely old news, but it's back up, started up again in the States. There's obviously other exciting things we're going to get to in a moment here, but I just wanted to touch base with you. You had recently saw the show in Detroit, right?
Yeah, the opening or reopening in Detroit. And, you know, it was really nothing unusual happened really until Patti Smith came out. And it seemed she was a little confused as to when the verse and the chorus was. The song kind of took on a different life of its own when she came out. And it got a little more experimental, but it was just cool to see her in that room. And then, of course, when they did One, the graphics on the screen changed. It went it opened with the Texas flag, which morphed into, I believe, it went from the Texas flag to the American flag to the Red Cross to the message at the bottom about, you know, texting 90999 to the Red Cross to donate $10. So it was, I thought that was very fitting. And of course, when you have that kind of sentiment during the or you know, towards the end of the show, it's kind of hard to bounce back from that and say, okay, now here's our new single, surprise, you know. You're the best thing about me.
Or the blackout, little, you know. You don't want to have a blackout with a hurricane.
Yeah.
Yeah. They rehearsed the new songs, at least two of them, I think, before the show. So there was a lot of speculation as to, you know, we all kind of thought they were going to play it because they rehearsed it so much. But I can't think of where or when in the show they would actually do that, where it would work. So.
And plus, I bet they promised the Tonight Show people that it would be the first live performance of that song.
Probably, maybe that's what they were rehearsing for. You know, maybe not the show itself, but so yeah. I mean, it was disappointing when that happened, but I can kind of understand that. And it was I don't know if this has happened before, but this is the fourth time I've seen the show. I've saw both Chicago shows and the Cleveland show. And now Detroit, and it had a roof over the stadium, which I thought was odd. And I know it's kind of a weird thing to harp on about, but You know, I really just, that screen should not have like these safety lights on, you know, behind it. It should just be blackness behind that screen just to give it that more cinematic feel to it. So that was, I thought that was kind of odd, but, Beck was a great opener. So that was amazing.
Yeah. How was he received by the YouTube crowd? Like, was it,
I think pretty favorably. I mean, even if, you know, not a lot of people knew his songs. I mean, he opened with two of the hits, but he got the crowd going. He got the crowd moving and excited. So, I mean, he knows how to do that sort of thing. He's played in big venues before, so it's not like the Lumineers, who had, you know, a bit of a learning curve when they came out.
Yeah.
But so I thought Beck was just great, a great opener for this.
And where were you situated for the show? Like in the stadium?
This was the first time I situated myself. It was GA, and I was I went towards Edge's side this time, which I hadn't done before. So I usually try to go dead center, because, you know, dead center, middle, you know, like 30 people back. So I think that's just the best way to watch the video images on there. Mm-hmm. And so this was, you know, the one thing I noticed about the, you know, been wondering why there's a curve in the screen, and I don't know if we ever got a definitive answer or not, but when the One Tree Hill is on and that tree, the Joshua tree, is lit up, it really looks three-dimensional. If you look at it long enough, you see like the tree coming, you know, just parts of the branches really coming out at you, even though it's like, you know, you don't have 3D glasses to make that happen, but it really looks like it is. So
yeah.
I don't know if the curve has something to do with that, but I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think there's I was just trying to find the reference to it. I know it's on at u2.com somewhere, but the link to, is it Popular Mechanics or Engineering Magazine? I forget which article.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Popular Mechanics.
We'll put a link in the show notes to it, but just a great article just on the technical side of just constructing the, and it isn't like a play-by-play of building the screen, but tells an interesting story, I guess, of how the crew is involved and who is involved with building the screen and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, there's a good video with it too.
Oh, is there? Oh, good. I actually instapapered it and missed that. So I'll have to go back and catch that, the video version of that. But yeah, definitely worth a read and apparently a watch. So, just in terms of the inbox, we have the ask at you two, hashtag ask at you two inbox, that you can send in questions, comments through Twitter, and we'll hopefully try and grab them. And we actually had an audio message from at Bruner Caffey, I think, if I lined everything up right. We should hear that shortly here.
Hi guys, this is Christoph from Switzerland, a big fan of your podcast. My contribution is a bit off topic, but maybe not so much, because you two have just started to promote their next record. And I don't know if you followed former U2 supporting act Arcade Fire. They released the latest record Everything Now a few weeks ago, and their promotion campaign reminded me very much of U2 in the Achtung Baby Sue TV era. Arcade Fire set up fake corporations and fake social media accounts. They released strange TV ads for products, for example, a fidget spinner containing their new album. The look of some of their videos had very much the Sue TV feeling, this feeling of information overload. And I really think they were inspired by U2, because Arcade Fire seemed to be fans. Maybe you remember a few years back, Arcade Fire performed with big, massive hats on, similar to the big, massive hats that U2 had before their Sue Roper shows. So I thought this was really cool that U2 not only musically inspire bands, but also in the way the bands do their promotion work. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you, guys. Keep up the good work with the podcast. Bye.
Thank you. And yeah, we love getting audio questions or comments from listeners. There'll be a link in the show notes. It's basically a link to a Dropbox where you can throw drop audio files into if you want to record one. That's what he did. And or you can just Twitter message me a Dropbox link or whatever you want to do on Twitter, and I'll grab an audio file that way too. But yeah, what do you guys think? I certainly sort of felt like a bit of reminiscing in terms of what Arcade Fire was doing in their promotions, and I'm sure there's other bands that have sort of lifted various parts of a band like U2 and, you know, made it their own a little bit. Coldplay being another one in terms of lots of sort of things. They seem to be mirroring what U2 has done over the years. But yeah, I don't know. Sherry, you're sort of nodding your head along with that.
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing that came to mind when I started watching some of the Arcade Fire promotions, and especially when they did their performance on what was it?
SNL?
Show with Stephen Colbert, where he had to, you know, present this fake product, and they did this video for the Everything Now Corporation beforehand, and all I could keep thinking of was Zoo TV, the Zoo TV outside broadcast Thanksgiving special, where it was the almost the entire show was this fake program with fake news and fake products, and also going as far as Pop Mart, where you had Pop for Men, Pop for Sport, Pop for Perfume, Pop for everything, that it just felt very deja vu-y that, 25 years later, here we have a different band doing almost the exact same thing that U2 did a quarter century ago.
Yeah, Arcade Fire is kind of my number two band. So I've seen them about 10 times, and he is right on target about everything and about the promotional stuff and the big paper mache heads. I remember when I went and saw the Arcade Fire on the Reflector tour a few years ago, you walk into the stadium and there's people on the floor, it's general admission, with the paper mache Arcade Fire heads on, just kind of dancing around the floor as people were coming in, very much like the Zoo TV intro, the pre-show thing that they did in Europe. And Arcade Fire's shows have gotten bigger and more elaborate and using a lot more video reinforcement over the years. They are definitely have that ambition to put on shows on the scale of U2. And then, of course, they've learned a lot from, they've borrowed a lot of things that U2 have done. But I think I don't think it's ripping off. I just think it's kind of updating it for this generation of music fans who aren't being brought up on U2. They discovered Arcade Fire the way we discovered U2 all those years, decades ago. So I think it's great. I mean, I've been enjoying watching their rise and the their shows and how much more sophisticated they've been getting. And like U2, they've incorporated a lot of spirituality in their music, and they get very political. And but there's also a lot of heart and soul in their music. So the similarities and the parallels. There's a lot of Pop Mart parallels in the last tour and the last album. So it's not surprising to me, but I think it's pretty great.
Yeah. And it's less, it's more homage and less ripping it off, I guess, is the sentiment, right? It's not
they're
like
doing it their way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That idea of, yeah. And it's not, unheard of, I guess, unusual to be, sort of analyzing and looking at our culture, whether it's capitalism or the way the media talks to us. And
yeah, and I think when U2 did it, part of it was making fun of themselves and sending up their own kind of self-seriousness of the 80s, whereas Arcade Fire, it's really is more about the bigger picture about our, our country and our culture and all that. So
yeah, cool. At Shki23, what's up with Edge saying that Bono had a health scare, worried he might not be around much longer while making Songs of Experience? I don't know. Do you guys know what they're referring to exactly there?
Yeah, that was one of the interviews that he gave today in the marathon phone calls to promote "You're the Best Thing About Me." I think he might have been referencing. Well, we had the back issue back in 2010. We had the bike issue that, of course, we all know about. They're not getting any younger. So I think except that, I still believe that the younger the audience in the stadium at the start of the show, when they leave the show, they look about 20 years older because Larry just sucks the life force right out of them. But, that's another podcast topic. No,
that's what that wave is all about. Actually, halfway through, when Larry does that thumbs up or whatever,
yes,
that's actually,
yes.
Yeah.
so all of that health talk, I think that it definitely put a damper on we're going to live forever, and they're realizing their own mortality.
Yeah. And there's something else Bono had mentioned. I think there a question from at Faroe too, a little later on, that kind of ties into this idea of any thoughts on the last question, the very evasive non-answer by Bono in the Dutch radio interview, where the host said something about, you better make sure this album is not goodbye, just a new start. And Bono doesn't really answer that and just says, thanks for the interview, and made some jokes about how he had done some Joshua Tree artwork for them in the past and kind of just skipped over that. And so it does kind of leave you, I mean, who knows? They could just be tired from concert the night before and not really running out of time and trying to get on to the next thing or whatever. But also, if they are sort of dropping little hints along the way of it, does kind of make the fans, I guess, a little anxious, right?
Well, I don't think that was the only interview where there was a reference about that. Bono is acquaintances with who is it, Matt Brendan Kennedy Kennelly, the
Kennelly.
Yeah, Brendan Kennedy. The Irish writer. Poet. He actually helped Bono with his bullet rant for the 2015 tour, and wrote the liner notes for the Innocence and Experience in Paris set. But he gave Bono some advice to write as if you're dying. So that might be part of the inspiration behind the album. But you also have behind the scenes, you know, what more is there to say? You know, they're coming to the end of a contract. At least I believe that they're coming to the end of their contract. We don't know if they're going to renew it or not. They may just, you know, decide we're done with the studio stuff and that's it. So if this is the last album that's out, they want to be proud of it. And I also think that the death of David Bowie might have kind of reframed the way that they want their career to be. So, you know, if he doesn't want us to have these conversations, he shouldn't be saying those types of things.
So if you're listening, Bono. Yeah.
I'll take a different tact on that. I think something happened. There were two mentions. Bono, in the Dutch interview, Bono said something about how he had some sort of health scare or some bumps in the road while they were working on this album. So in a Spanish radio interview, Edge said that something happened, some very serious event happened that caused Bono to reflect on everything and decide to write the songs as letters to the people around him.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's referring to the back injury and, you know, any of the other things that happened 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. It sounds to me that they're hinting that something that we have no idea about happened within like the last year, because the album was supposed to come out like a year ago, and then the election, they decided to kind of redo things, refocus. So I just, there were those two quotes that just kind of really make you think, like, what on earth was going on? And it just makes me wonder if we're ever going to hear any more about it, or if these little two kind of mysterious, cryptic references to it is that it? I don't know. But it sounds to me very, very, very much sounds to me like something happened while they were reworking these songs.
Well, it is those little things that give him away, Matt.
It is. You're right.
And obviously, I would say, like, my mind goes to, like, I remember, you know, say, even somewhat apt comparison, I guess, but like back to the when Steve Jobs and Apple, and they were sort of like hiding the fact that Steve Jobs was really sick. And so, like, I would go that way. But the fact that they sort of delayed this album and did the Joshua Tree thing points to me, anyways, gives me some reassurance that it's not that he's got some terminal illness that he's hiding from us, or somehow, you know, going on tour, doing the Joshua Tree tour and living with something that's, you know, imminent as far as health wise, I guess. But maybe there was something that happened, or like Matt said, you know, either to him personally or in their life.
I thought it goes back to the bike incident, that it could have all been gone as quick as that.
Right.
And as he was laying flat on his back for, you know, how long, Songs of Innocence had already been released at that point. And I recall during his mending period before the tour, them saying that he was focusing on the craft of his songwriting a bit more. And that was when the first idea of writing letters came up. So I honestly, I think that they may be referencing the bike accident in that type of way. I don't think that it was anything in addition to that.
Yeah. Well, we'll only find out someday if we get another, I don't know, Bill Flanagan book or some sort of behind the scenes expose thing or whatever that they decide to do.
Andy, at Rolling Stone.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's jump up to the topic of the week. You hadn't talked about the blackout either, did you, last episode? Or was it,
right? Right.
We waited for you, Chris.
Yeah.
We did.
Thank you.
Because you're the best thing about us. And so yes, we decided to have a blackout last week for the blackout. That was the most important. No, we talked about doing a quick B-side last week, but scheduling and just all the craziness, and it never happened. So.
Right. So yeah, since last we recorded an episode anyways, they released the blackout. Well, it's not really a release. I don't know. Even Bono kind of fumbled as far as how to reference it. It's on Facebook somewhere, he said. And so you can watch it on there if you want to listen on it there. So it's not a single. This is what's funny to me is like it's sort of a song that's out there that you can go listen to, but it's not our official single in the way that back in the 90s and stuff, we used to release singles. But now we're going to release You're the Best Thing About Me as our single. So now focus on that one. And I guess I'm just curious, just from a marketing perspective, what your guys' thoughts are on how that all kind of plays out. Like why we've heard now three songs from this album already in various ways. And they're kind of like trickling it out. They're not doing the big bam release of the last album. So why sort of trickle this stuff out? Is it because we're going to be scared of what we hear in one song, so they want to give us another one to for the people who like the ballad and the love songs? Or I don't know. Matt, you're about to exhale.
Yeah, I'll just for those watching the video, I'm raising my hand. Yeah. I just think that they are doing this. I think they started playing Little Things That Give You Away in Vancouver, and I think they're doing this now as the third leg of the tour starts, primarily to remind everybody that they are not a nostalgia act, that they have new music, that they are forward-looking, that this is not just it's not the glorifying the past while the future dries up, et cetera, that sort of thing. So that to me is what is motivating the decision to get these songs out there while they are touring a 30-year-old album. Mic drop.
Okay. I mean, that sounds right. I mean, in the wake of the Joshua Tree tour, like there's been one think piece after another about nostalgia. And the band is very susceptible to that sort of perception. And they like to just get out ahead of their critics as much as possible. Yeah. So I think that theory is pretty solid.
I think that it's going to be a very busy fall for new music coming out. Funnily enough, I had this conversation earlier in the day that somebody thinks that U2 is just trying to copy Taylor Swift in
that seems right.
Dropping a lyric video, then they drop the regular video, then it goes to radio, then it goes to ABC for their Scandal premiere music, and then to ESPN. That I'm like, well, you two kind of did it before Taylor was even born. So it's like one-upping one another on that. But it's also very deliberate versus what we had for Songs of Innocence. People are going to know almost, a third of the album before the album's even released. And the only single you can purchase right now is You're the Best Thing About Me. You can't purchase Blackout. You can't purchase Little Things That Give You Away. You're going to have to get the album if you want those other two songs. So I think that it's a smart way to get people familiar with the music. And, Bono even said in one of the interviews today, I think it was on a WXRT, that he wants to hear the blackout at a gig, but when he's flipping on the radio, he wants a song with light. So it's sort of the best of both worlds. You've got the light pop hit versus the punk hit, both hitting at around the same time. Mm-hmm. So it caters to a wider audience.
So then I guess just following the promotional discussion, I guess a little further down the road. So what do they do next then? At some point the talk is December 1st as the album is released, but do they have another single that comes out post-album, pre-album? And if so, would it be something we've already heard, like the Blackout or the You're the Best, or the Little Things That Give You Away? Or is it then a fourth song that we have yet to hear that is released as a single?
It wouldn't surprise me if they released The Showman, seeing as that's a letter to the fans about not trusting performers, as Bono said earlier today. It wouldn't surprise me if that one was the fourth single. Or the second single, but fourth song.
Second single. Whoa. Yeah, I have no, I mean, just speculating. Yeah. I would assume there will be another single before Christmas, around the time that the album comes out. I don't think Best Thing is going to have like a 3-month shelf life. So yeah, I would assume there'll be more videos and more promotional stuff to come when the album comes out. And I would assume that after the tour ends in October, that they will do some promotional appearances, you know, like they did for the past few albums, TV shows, that sort of stuff. And I don't see why they wouldn't.
Which is, yeah, the we'll talk about it, I guess, but they're not going to be on the Tonight Show on tomorrow night, actually, as we record this. So, the all they've released so far, the singles in the various iTunes stores, the Amazon streaming, every, you know, streaming services all over. There's the official lyric video that they released, copying Taylor Swift, as we mentioned, but not an official video for it, right? Other than that, like, there's no traditional music video that they've put out. And so
there will be coming.
Yeah,
there will be one next week.
All right. Well, there you go.
Ooh, I think breaking news, Matt.
Dun, 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 dun.
And in the meantime, I mean, they also, it looks like they lifted the embargo for all the press people who got to listen to the album, you know, in those private listening parties, because the New York Times, I think it was the New York Times, had a big article about somebody who heard the whole album. So from between now and the release of the album, we might see a lot more write-ups about it, and that just gets the word out even more. So it's just, I mean, U2 has learned from past mistakes to not take anything for granted as far as, you know, getting, making sure people know your album is out there and getting as much promotion on it as you can, so you can, you know, pay for these extravagant tours and everything.
The good thing is Taylor Swift's album comes out 3 weeks before U2's, so we should be good on that.
Right. they're just copying her, obviously, right? That's exactly what's going on there. So, do you think as a band they're worried each time, like when they release a new album, right? Like they, and Bono's kind of like either in character of promotion for the album has sort of said things like this, alluded to this, things like this of like reapplying for the job and all that kind of stuff. But do you think as they get ready for this, are they actually nervous that, you know, it's only going to be sold to 50,000 people and they're going to be done? Or have they, somewhere we were, I think in the Slack, U2 Slack, when we were chatting a bit about like sort of their legacy and all that kind of stuff. And are they sort of established now and they're not too worried anymore that they're going to fumble and make a really serious mistake with something like this? Or do they still get, does Larry lie awake at night worrying about, what's going to happen when the album is released and how are they going to fit these song titles?
Larry lies awake at night worrying about wrinkles on his face.
He tries not to worry. Otherwise he'll get worried.
And whether he looks, you know, 29 or 30 yet. I don't know, Chris, they always talk that way and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I have a hard time believing because we've heard it so many times. So maybe the general public who doesn't, you know, follow every word that they utter, you know, maybe they buy into it hook, line and sinker and, you know, oh, wow, you know, U2 is really scared that they're not going to be have a hit or anything like that. I don't know. I just, it's come just being the, you know, as we, you know, part of a fan site and, you know, reporting on everything they say and doing all this stuff. It just, for me, it's just hard to have a sense of how much of that is just them knowing that they have a good line that they can tell a reporter versus what they actually believe. So
yeah, that's sort of false.
I don't know.
This is probably one of the most vetted albums before the album was released. I mean, think about all the listening parties that they had prior to the shows in stadiums, where you had a large variety of different people there from radio, from promotion, you know, across the sphere. All the friends that have heard it, all the people who probably shouldn't have heard it but have, they've been playing it to people during interviews. I mean, I think about the Adams there with the U2 Talking to Me podcast that they heard five songs. Kimmel said that he had heard half the album. I'm sure Fallon's heard it.
Four of us are the only ones that haven't. So
I would agree with you on that little fact.
I ran into Bono on the bus today and he played it for me. So yeah, I'm not allowed to say that. So we'll edit that part out. But yeah,
it's interesting that they're only like letting people hear like five songs, you know, because they're so into the concept of the album and hearing things as an album and, you know, taking that album journey. And now it's just like, yeah, we'll let you hear a few songs here, a few songs there.
It's still more than they normally would. So
Matt, you had a poll that you were running on at U2 today. What, I forget, was it the comparison of the two songs or was it, what was the question?
Yeah, we didn't actually post it on the site, just use the social channels, Twitter and Facebook to get the word out. But it was a little three question thing, asking what do you think of the new song, best thing? What do you think of the Blackout, and which one do you like better? And people were like, yo, what about Little Things? Well, Little Things we've only heard live, and from what I have heard from Little Birdies, the album version is going to sound different from what we've heard live. So I thought, you know what, let's not have people judge something that may sound different on the record. So let's just focus on, you know, these two released songs in the last week. And so, yeah, my goodness, like it was like 6 hours ago, I think, and we already have more than 1,600 responses. It's just crazy. Oh my gosh. You want me to real quick go over the, summation of the results. Okay. So question one, what do you think of U2's new song? You're the best thing about me. 29% love it, 44% like it. So there's 73% with a positive reaction. 16% are neutral. And then the other say 9% don't like it. So you've got 73 like it, 9 don't like it. For the Blackout, it's even more lopsided. It's about 83% like it or love it, and only about 4% don't like it or hate it. The rest are neutral. And then the last question, which of the two songs do you like better? It's Blackout 60%, Best Thing 40%. So there you go.
Well,
sort of follows the statistics run by our friend Beth Nabby in her classroom today. She put up a board for her students to ask which one do you like better, and played both songs. And the kids went for the Blackout, as did Mrs. Mullen Jr. on Twitter. She has a grade school class. And she did the same thing. And hey, the kids prefer the Blackout. Yeah. So here you have
Between Beth and her class, and then Mrs. Mullen Jr., and then on our staff, Dave Witt, who's teaching a U2 class. I mean, it just makes me want to go back to college all of a sudden. I'm thinking this classes weren't like this when I was in school.
Yeah. Well, I think isn't Mrs. Mullen Jr. She's like elementary school, right, or something? I saw a tweet somewhere.
I think it's
or high school maybe.
Sixth grade or seventh grade. Anyway. She hands out Bono bucks for good behavior and instead of flat Stanley, it's a flat Bono in her classroom. And her teaching is centered around U2 related things, and specifically Bono. Just funny because she's Mrs. Mullen Jr., but that's a whole nother issue. Man.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I want her to work at my elementary school. I work at an elementary school, and that we have nothing that cool. But. Although I teach a Star Wars class, so I have that distinction. So.
Yeah, that's
pretty
cool.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
See, we didn't have classes like this when I was in school.
Right? Yeah.
Which brings me to my question, Colin. So if you think about the three songs that have been released, would you think of little things that give you away as being Star Wars, Blackout as being Empire Strikes Back, and You're the Best Thing About Me as Return of the Jedi sans Ewoks. What are your thoughts?
No, I think You're the Best Thing About Me is Jedi with
Nerd
Ewoks.
Factor 30 okay. right now.
No, I think, I had my Ewok moment today when I heard the song. So, yeah. I agree with that. Yes, Blackout is definitely Empire Strikes Back because it's the darkest. Yeah, I agree.
That's a real Zoo TV moment.
So it's completely irrelevant, but in terms of the big picture, but it's just kind of fun to do, just like you did in the poll. Which song do you like better, the Blackout or You're the Best Thing About Me? Let's say you're in the room and Bono's looking at you and saying, which song should we put out as our first single? Irrelevant of what actually has happened, but or whatever metric you want to use for why you'd pick one over the other anyways. But you're on a desert island. You can only take one of the songs, whichever way we want to frame this question. But starting with Sherry, the Blackout or You're the Best Thing About Me, and why, I guess. Which one is your
Blackout pick? Hands down, because we need rock and roll, and that's a rock and roll song.
All right, Colin, how about you?
100% agree. Yeah, definitely.
And not just from a marketing perspective, you're thinking, but just like you want the rock.
It's better production. I like that I can't really understand everything he's saying on the first listen. I kind of like the distortion. I love the sound of the crowd. I hope it's on the album. I have a feeling it won't be. I dig it. I think it's terrific. Whereas the other one, I just, I don't know. I'm trying. I'm really trying to.
It's the U2 fan dilemma of like feeling obligated to like something, but
it's like, oh man, I really want to be more excited about this, but I'm just not feeling it.
All right, Matt, how about you?
I'm the exact opposite of Colin. I am Best Things hands down. Blackout to me is Paint by Numbers U2. I listened to it once and I have not listened to it since. I don't hate it. It sounds just like The Miracle. It sounds just like Boots. It sounds just like Vertigo. And I kind of wonder if maybe they just put it out there the way they did because they know it sounds like all those other songs that they've released as their first singles. Blackout, it just did not grab me. Best Thing, not my favorite U2 song by any means. I do like the remix version, that sci-fi, whatever it's called, sci-fi soul. I think that's really, really good. But yeah, I prefer the Best Thing of the two of them. So
you know what else I don't like?
You know what else?
Matt, do you think the band wanted to release Blackout as the first single, but the label said no? We want You're the Best Thing About Me as the first single.
I would like to think that they get to choose that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, at this point, well, especially you
the
think
the band hasn't been very successful with choices of launch singles,
and maybe you just hit on why there's two of them out there, because they know the last few times that they've just picked one that maybe it wasn't the best one to choose. Well, let's put a couple different ones out there, especially two that sound one more rock / punk, one more pop. So that could have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I think the Blackout, I'd err on the side of the rock songs, and I get where you're coming from, Matt, in terms of it sounding a lot like a few of their other sort of more rocky, let's make a distortion song kind of thing. But if something about it, I think just even the just purely the amount of like chord changes changes they put in there that Adam has to keep up with and Edge has to remember to do, like if they consider playing it live or whatever, it actually has like some like some effort required to play it, I guess, in the way that like a Vertigo often, it's just, it's very simplistic in form anyways. Not that it's easy to write a song like Vertigo or Boots or whatever, but yeah, it feels like there's at least some musically, some challenge to it, I guess, that they put into it, some effort.
Yeah. And I totally respect what you're saying, but I, as a non-musician, I come from a different place. Yeah. So what it's like to play it, I just pick on a guitar. But like that distorted guitar sound, I hate, here's go ahead with that sound effect. You know what else I don't like? I'm tired of that distorted. Yeah, see, I'm just tired of that distorted guitar sound from it was like throughout almost all of the last album, and I'm like, I want Edge back. I want the Edge with the shimmer and the echo, the chiming. That's I want that back. So I don't know. I think that probably played into why I don't like Blackout. I've had enough of songs that sound like that. So anyway, but I totally respect that you guys like it, and I think that's cool and all that sort of stuff. So I'll shut up now.
So we all have things that we're like tired of that we want more of, and
exactly. And I hate when we have conversations like this because it sounds like I'm whining, and I'm not whining. Right. I just whatever. Volcanoes.
Like I'm tired of the songs that are about Bono being self-deprecating, and I don't deserve everything that I have. I'm tired of that, and that's what I heard today, and I'm just like, oh, come on. But you know, I have a feeling when I hear this, when I hear You're the Best Thing, when I hear it live, I'll probably feel differently. It's happened before. It might happen with this song. I can see it.
Well, I see Best Thing live to transform. I mean, had it not been for Kygo dropping the song a year ago, live in concert, that sort of distorted my perspective of the song, because I love that Kygo mix. And so listening to the album mix or the single mix that they released today, it brought me back to Might Go Crazy If You Don't Go Crazy Tonight, because in concert, I love that dance version of it. And the version on the album, it's kind of poppy and folksy. I see something very similar with You're the Best Thing About Me, where you're going to have a good dance version, a dance remix coming from Kygo soon.
He's going to be allowed to?
he's been playing it in concert past few shows. So I kind of see Kygo's version superseding U2's own version, but U2's getting it out there so that you get used to the album mix, and then, hey, here's this really cool mix that y'all will like. That's why I think this song's got a bit of longevity, because they are staggering the different versions of this song so that radio stations can have a choice of which version they want to play.
And I'm totally down with that. Like I would totally love this song if the production on it were just more, and I know Bono hates this word, but interesting. You know, it just sounds like it's Ordinary Love again. And I prefer the Eno stuff. I love the Eno Lenoir stuff to the Steve Lillywhite stuff. So I'm always looking for cooler textures and soundscapes that are unlike anything I've heard before. And U2 has always been good at delivering that. But this one just kind of sounds like, you know, just sounds like Lillywhite to me, which isn't always great.
Sorry, Steve, you're listening.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, I don't know. I prefer like to have my ears go, oh, wait, what's that sound? Oh, that's pretty cool. So if they do something different with it live and do more remixes of it, I will definitely warm up to the song a lot more, I'm sure.
And any song that can rhyme dinosaur and meteor.
Don't even get me going on that. No.
Yeah, I saw your comment in the Slack about the names that he calls out, and you know, sort of a callback maybe to Paul Simon and stuff. And I hear that, but it's nowhere near as good as Paul Simon. So it feels like maybe it's like we were talking about Arcade Fire, an homage or whatever, I guess. But it feels more like Lazy Bono just needed something to rhyme with Ned or with whatever. Yeah,
the Fred, other Ned, Zach
and Jack.
Yeah.
It's all like really easy one syllable names and
Cornelius.
Yeah. Mr. Attachments in the chat said, I like Best Thing We Got Today, but I really like the mix of the song with the leak from Bono playing in Easy. Ease and at Kygo's concert both much better. So yeah, I thought maybe Kygo would go the Howie B route and be sort of banished from U2 Kingdom after the leak or whatever, playing it prematurely, but I guess it's good that he's getting to stick around on his own, obviously. But yeah, so curious what you fans, listeners out there are thinking, U2 fans out there are thinking, and I don't know if the poll is still active or not, but you can also tweet at any of us if you disagree with or agree strongly enough to tweet back at us with what your thoughts are on the order of things, the particular songs, what your thoughts are on the blackout, or little things that give you away, and especially obviously the, You're the Best Thing About Me. Briefly, I guess, on the cover of the single, which I don't know, aside from like obviously in iTunes, etc., is there like, why are you pointing, Sherry?
Because that's the cover.
Oh, it's right.
The cover. I'm doing on the video version. Sorry, if you're on the video version. Oh,
wrong way.
It's not, you know, yeah, it's not really, I think the first time that we posted about it, I called it the cover image. And I was like, wait a second, there's not a cover. There's not going to be a physical CD. So then I just started calling it a promo image. I think that would be more apropos, right?
Yeah, it's not like going in a record store somewhere.
Well, and the promotional material, wasn't it on YouTube.com as the sleeve? Calling it a sleeve image?
Yeah, I saw that. And I was like, sleeve
image.
So
maybe they are going to... old school it.
No, they're not going to old
record
school
day. Right,
they are not going to
day.
Which is like
in November record store day. They will have the 15 different remixes of the single with that as the sleeve. Which is also funny because it is a Cyan Blue, and that is Cyan Evans. So that's a funny little thing that Beth Nabby pointed out.
I said this. I love the photo. It's a great photo. And I said this to Chris before you two hopped on, before we started recording. But you can tell why Edge is bald, because she got all the hair in the back.
Yeah, she's got a lot of hair.
I mean, that is a fantastic head of hair. That is awesome.
There's also a special visual art piece that will be coming for U2.com subscribers. Any thoughts on what, I mean, is that like a couple of photos that Edge took during the recordings, or is it
is that coming before the promised vinyls in September?
In September? Oh, yeah, I don't know. Oh, like for the YouTube.com subscribers.
Yeah, the membership gift. I want the membership gift before we get anything that we're
any more visual art pieces. Yeah, who knows? All right. Well, I think Matt's reaching for water, so it's probably about time we all go rehydrate and re-listen to the songs. Matt has to listen to, after he listens to Volcano, then go listen to The Blackout a couple more times yet.
Oh, no, it's seriously. Don't do that. It's not
and
like
that.
And
then he will sleep like a baby tonight.
Trust me. Blackout is like light years better than Sleep Like a Baby Tonight. It is not at all like that, and I did not mean to give that impression. So,
how about Volcano? Where does it sit compared to The Blackout?
Volcano, I have come around to a degree on, so yeah.
That's a very Bono answer to are you?
Why is this still a thing?
Because this is the internet. This is what we do. Beat things to death and then keep them going a little longer. All right.
It's like our At U2 meme.
Yeah. So like we said earlier, U2, as we record this, U2 is going to be on Jimmy Fallon Thursday night in the States, and wherever the Tonight Show happens to be aired, I guess. And Sherry, somebody mentioned that there's a football game on, so it might go later. And so set your DVR if you're recording it for an hour longer. I'm sure it'll be everywhere on the internet as well. Their Tonight Show YouTube channel and stuff like that as well. But if they do any special live stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I would hope so. But in the case of Jimmy Kimmel, they did put up on Kimmel's official YouTube site little things that give you away, but within 6 hours it was taken down. So yeah. I would imagine if they do the Blackout as a second song, because they're doing two songs, that song has not been officially released. So it may not be available. And the label has been really fast about taking down stuff off of YouTube. So if fans think that they can throw it up onto YouTube, you'll probably get it taken down pretty quick.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the internet finds a way, or fortunately, I guess, depending on your perspective, which side of the lawyer camp you're on. So their life finds a way. So wrapping up, I guess, where can folks tweet at you if they disagree with some of your comments or thoughts or have a strong agreement? There's no reason it has to all be negative, Matt. You don't have to get too sad.
I'm not. Cover that up on the screen. I'm erasing my Twitter. All the Blackout fans are blacking at me. I'm done.
Matt is blocking.
Hey, I'm gonna catch just as much heat as you. Maybe I mean because be ripping on the new single that came out today that has everyone excited.
Yeah,
is that me?
All right, Colin, what's your Twitter account so people can?
Oh, sure. I'll give a fake one. No.
Not Matt McGee.
There is another Colin Suter out there, so he's in for a treat tomorrow. it's at Colin_Suter.
All right, Matt, how about you?
I'm not. I am leaving Twitter tonight. I am canceling my account. I'm making it private.
All right. I won't.
All right. I'm at Matt McGee, but I don't even want to. Don't at me.
Yeah. And Sherry, how are you?
I was going to say I'm at Matt McGee, but you can always reach me at U2Com Sherry.
The listeners are very nice. They're very kind. I'm Chris on Twitter. You can also tweet at the @U2 account, twitter.com/ATU2, facebook.com/ATU2com, and instagram.com/ATU2com. Next show that the band is doing is in New Friday. York, right?
Friday in Minnesota. Minneapolis.
New York? They were just in New York. Oh, right. They're in
New York for tonight's show.
Yeah, tonight's show, but not. Yeah. Okay.
And there's still general admission tickets available for it. They did a GA drop. So by the time you listen to this podcast, there may still be tickets left, but there are GAs left for several of the North American tour dates.
All right.
Over the next 2.5 weeks.
Oh, Minneapolis is only like a 20-hour drive from where I am. I guess I could quickly boot down there. We'll see.
You are there.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to the three of you for joining me. And hopefully it all recorded and you get to listen to it or watch it later on our YouTube channel or whatever. We'll post it on at youtube.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye.